This is the voice of the Trumpet Magazine. News, economy, politics, trends, discovery, health, family, the Bible, the future. This is Trumpet Hour.
Thanks so much for joining us today. I am Joel Hilliker. We sent our newest Trumpet print edition to press last week, and it has several articles about Germany and Russia. And is so often the case with the Trumpet, the relevance of the subjects we highlight in the magazine actually grows as it is being printed and distributed to our readers. That certainly happened this past week as tensions over an impending invasion of Ukraine by Russia grow. And Germany is stunningly supportive, certainly showing no interest in trying to help Ukraine. Several nations are stepping in to help Ukraine out, but they're being thwarted by Germany. It's a remarkable moment for NATO and the transatlantic relationship. The cover story in this Trumpet issue is about the rise of German business and industry and the power it wields over German politics. They've played a huge role in pushing the Nord Stream 2 pipeline that places enormous power in Russia's hands. We also have articles about the historic and prophetic importance of the Germany-Russia relationship and about the pressure that Russia is putting on its former Soviet states in Eastern Europe right now. We'll have a conversation in our first segment with Trumpet writer Richard Palmer to help us understand what is at stake in Ukraine and why this is such an important situation to watch. Then we'll hear a somewhat related story about how compromised America's position is in dealing with this threat of invasion from Russia. We spoke last Friday about Joe Biden saying it might be okay for Russia to make a, quote, minor incursion into Ukraine without consequences. Some analysts say the chances are very high that Vladimir Putin is blackmailing Joe Biden over his and his son's illegal activities in Ukraine. A new book also says the Biden family scored $31 million from five deals in China, thanks to people with direct ties to China's spy apparatus. We'll hear from Trumpet writer Andrew Miller about the very serious real-world problems that can result from corruption in America's leaders. In our third segment, we will talk about high blood pressure. It's one of the biggest killers out there. And personal trainer and holistic nutritionist Jörg Mardian says the way doctors treat it is all wrong. He says you can lower your blood pressure naturally. But to start today's show, how Germany is betraying Ukraine. To talk about this, we have via Skype from our office in England, Trumpet writer Richard Palmer. Hello, Richard.
Good afternoon.
First of all, talk about the position Ukraine sits in relative to Russia and Europe. It's a former Soviet state. It has long sought membership in the European Union and NATO. So it's sort of straddling two worlds here.
It's much more important to Russia than it is to Europe. And I think that's been its big problem all along here. It's a former Soviet state. It's not a former Warsaw Pact. It used to be part of the Soviet Union. This used to be a location for Russian missile bases. Russia's most important naval base, Sevastopol, is in Crimea, which is part of Ukraine, even though Russia has taken this now. Russia does not have in Europe any good natural borders. And so the only way that they can kind of compensate for this is pushing any possible invaders as far away from their kind of core territory as possible. If Hitler or Napoleon had invaded Russia starting in Ukraine, starting with Ukraine on their side, there is no question they would have won, and Russia and world history as we know it would not exist. So Ukraine is absolutely fundamental for Russia's defense. And it's a breadbasket as well. There's lots of coal and things like that. There are other advantages. But really, it is kind of part of the territory Russia feels like it needs to be a great power, to project itself around the world. So for Russia, it's critical that they have Ukraine. I think that's why Vladimir Putin is willing to go to the lengths that he's willing to go to to trying to get that. And talking about how important this is to Russia does nothing to dismiss or to mollify the concerns of Ukrainians who are looking and seeing their country invaded by a ruthless dictator. I think if I were a Ukrainian, I could certainly sympathize with those that are going out and getting guns and preparing to defend their homes and everything like that. But you can see why Russia wants this as well.
Speak a little bit about the just Ukraine's dalliances with the West and its efforts to reorient itself since the fall of the Soviet Union in 1991. It's been independent, and you have had quite a number of Ukrainians and even some Ukrainian leaders that have sought that Western orientation as a means of distancing itself from that past with Russia.
Yeah, just as kind of Poland and Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, they kind of escaped the brutal Soviet regime, and part of that by making alliances with NATO and joining the European Union. To Ukraine, this seems like the path out of dictatorship and then out of the kind of corruption and semi-dictatorship and oligarchy that followed the fall of the Soviet Union. And Ukraine has an absolutely brutal history with Russia. You've got the Holodomor, for example, a forced starvation that killed around 10 million people. You know, this, in terms of people dying, this was bigger than the Holocaust, with Russia coming in there and just deliberately starving Ukrainian citizens to death. So they have suffered brutally from Russia, and they would do just about anything to escape that repressive system, to have their independence. And so for Ukraine, membership of the European Union and NATO have been seen as tickets out of that. So you had, was it Viktor Yanukovych was initially in charge of Ukraine for a long time, and he was this kind of corrupt Russian puppet. And then you had the color revolution, the Maidan revolution. You had this time where it looked like it was going to change and that Ukraine had a popular uprising and was going to move into the West. And I think the first time this happened in the early 2000s, Russia kind of patiently subverted what was going on here and managed to steer Ukraine kind of back towards the Russian fold. They had another uprising again, and that is where Russia came in and kind of took a chunk of Crimea and occupied some of Ukraine's eastern provinces. And there has been conflict going on for the last 5-6 years in Ukraine. I think that often gets overlooked in the West, that people have been fighting and dying in Ukraine, you know, for years now. So that's been going on. And it's largely been unrequited by the West. I mean, you go back to the early 90s and Ukraine signed a deal with Britain and America, and I think France came along a bit later and made themselves a party of this deal, and with Russia, called the Budapest Memorandum, where Ukraine was left over with Soviet nuclear weapons after the fall of the Cold War. A lot of the world was quite nervous, quite rightly, about this newly independent state being a nuclear power, and would it be able to secure these nuclear weapons? Could this be a potential for terrorists, or what if you had a coup here and you've got nukes lying around? You know, it's a potentially incredibly dangerous situation. So Ukraine handed over those nuclear weapons in exchange for a piece of paper signed by Russia, by France, the United Kingdom, and the United States, saying, "We will protect you. We guarantee your independence if you give up these nukes." So they signed that piece of paper. They gave up the nuclear weapons. And in some ways, that was maybe the first step of them putting their trust in the West. They have tried to join the European Union. A lot of these demonstrations, it's all been about joining the European Union. The European Union and Germany have done remarkably little for Ukraine, though. There's been, I mean, they've had kind of dalliances with different Ukrainian politicians and they've done bits and pieces, but nothing really substantive. And you even saw the current president in his infamous phone call with Donald Trump complaining about how little Angela Merkel, who was then the Chancellor of Germany, and other European leaders had really done for their country. They kind of talked about honoring Ukraine's aspirations and lip service to their European vision, but very little practical help.
Well, that's excellent history. We really appreciate you taking us through that. Now we're in a situation where Russia is looks like they're ready to invade, 100,000 troops surrounding the country. We talked last Friday about some of the steps that Germany is taking to actually thwart NATO's efforts to protect Ukraine, forcing British flights to send weapons into Ukraine by going around German airspace, vetoing sanctions against Russia. Tell us, first of all, about these reports of Germany's chancellor actually refusing to meet with Joe Biden about this subject.
Yeah, this comes from Spiegel, which is Europe's largest circulation magazine. You know, this is really one of Europe's flagship news organizations, a very reliable source. And they're reporting that the Biden administration, you know, it's very clear that Germany is pulling in a different direction to a lot of Europe over this. And so the Biden administration reached out to the new German chancellor and invited him to come over to Washington and to discuss this with Mr. Biden and hammer it out. And normally, a meeting like that with the American president, especially for a newly elected leader, that's something they're normally falling over each other to accept, or falling over themselves to accept. It's a huge moment to parade like a statesman. You know, you look very statesmanlike. You get a bump in popularity as you're going over, and you are the face of Germany and showing that Germany is an important country. You are a serious, important politician that the most powerful man in the world wants to meet and talk with. You know, it's normally a big deal, and countries will work very hard, and leaders will work very hard to get themselves invited to the White House like that. I think you only need to look at how hard President Obama worked to deny Benjamin Netanyahu those kind of honors, you know, when he was sent out by the Bindor and that kind of thing. I think that gives you an idea of the prestige that comes from having these kind of public meetings with the U.S. president, you know, that they would try and take that away from Netanyahu because they didn't want to give him that boost in the polls. So normally this would be a big deal, and you would have thought he would have dropped everything and said, yes, you know, I'll be there tomorrow, let's do this. And instead it was, well, no, I'm sorry, I've got a busy schedule over the next while, maybe sometime in mid-February. Which even Spiegel was kind of taken aback by that, where it said it's rather difficult to fathom. Russia is building up the biggest threat since the end of the Cold War, deploying around 100,000 troops on the borders of Ukraine, stationing tanks, artillery, rocket launchers, and Germany's chancellor is unable to clear his schedule to accept an invitation from the American president. It is a pretty unprecedented step. And really, for the German chancellor to turn around and say, no, I don't want to talk to you, you know, we've got these divisions, I don't even want to talk to you about sorting these out, is very revealing. And it is as dramatic of a revelation about where Germany stands as any of those other things that you mentioned that we talked about on Friday.
Given that history that you were describing and Ukrainians' efforts to reorient themselves to the West and really to shore up relations with Germany in particular, how big of a betrayal is this by the Germans in the Ukrainians' eyes?
Well, the Ukrainians certainly feel very betrayed. I think it's the mayor of Kiev, Vitaly Klitschko, who he used to be Germany's candidate for Ukrainian president. And there was a lot of, you know, he had very close links to the German embassy. I think he even lived in Germany for a while. You know, he was widely viewed as Germany's man in Ukraine. Potentially even Germany's puppet of Ukraine. You know, this was the person they wanted running things. Even he came out and said this is failure to provide assistance and betrayal of friends. Germany used to be supporting him at least, but no longer. And he is not the only one. You've had some very undiplomatic language coming from the type of people that normally speak very carefully and diplomatically in Ukraine about what is going on here. The Ukrainian foreign minister said that Germany consistently blocking weapons like this was encouraging Vladimir Putin. The Ukrainian deputy prime minister, she gave an interview that was published on January 17th with Spiegel. She said Germany appears to be doing everything it can to allow Ukraine to fall. So they see this as a betrayal. I mean, by blocking these weapons exports and by trying to veto potential sanctions, I mean, they really are undermining Ukraine, and they are you know, they're telegraphing a message. And I think in a lot of ways, you know, I wonder how much, I think Vladimir Putin cares enough about Ukraine that he is prepared to invade if that is what it needs to do to get what he wants. I also think he would be quite happy if he could push Ukraine into a surrender without having to be as dramatic as a full-scale invasion. And by Germany coming along and saying, we are not behind you, and Russia, you will not be punished that badly if you do this, we're working to take options off the table, that is absolutely crippling for Ukraine's position. It makes it much harder for Ukraine to say, no, we will stand and fight, and really puts the pressure on them to compromise with Russia, because Germany's telegraphing that NATO doesn't have your back.
You know, this moment, it does feel like the revelation of something that has been in the works for a long time. It feels like this is kind of an inflection point. We're seeing Germany revealing its position in a way that maybe it has been telegraphing for a while. But in your trumpet brief on Monday, you said that the press was getting this story all wrong. You said they're saying, well, Germany got greedy or it was careless. It woke up one day to find itself in bed with Russia. Now it has no choice but to appease Vladimir Putin. The reality is what we are seeing is a deliberate plan by Germany that has been in the works for some time to move closer to Russia. Can you explain that?
Yeah, and there really well, there's no excuse really, I think, for the ignorance displayed by a lot of the press in kind of treating it as a big accident. You know, President Trump spent 4 years shouting very loudly that Germany was deliberately switching sides away from NATO and towards Russia. And this process had started long before he came into office. But he saw very clearly that by what Germany was building these oil pipelines with Russia, these gas pipelines with Russia, they were making a deliberate shift in their alliances. They were tying themselves to NATO's chief enemy, really, chief adversary, Russia. And so, you know, Germany didn't wake up one morning and find, oh, someone's built some pipelines between here and Russia. They knew when this got underway. People were saying, I remember, you know, back in 2005, people were talking about how this is putting them firmly in Russia's camp. This is going to make them dependent on Russia. This was a big deal in German politics at the time. Everyone was talking about this is going to be the effect of this policy. They did it anyway, or not anyway, they did it because that's part of the reason why. This is a way to kind of really cement Germany's relationship with Russia in a way that makes it hard for maybe some transient politician to undo. And so what you're seeing here in Europe, it's not just a betrayal of Ukraine. It's a betrayal of NATO as a whole. I mean, you look at what Vladimir Putin's trying to accomplish here. Yes, Ukraine is critical for Russia, and he wants that. But you look at, for example, the list of demands that he published towards the end of December about, you know, no more NATO expansion, no new troops in existing NATO members that are in Eastern Europe. Some of the focus of those demands was neutering NATO, was making NATO impotent. And in this conflict, Ukraine is not the only target. NATO is the target as well. And Vladimir Putin wants to cripple NATO. And so it is not just a story now of Germany betraying Ukraine. It's a story of Germany betraying NATO and that transatlantic alliance. And so and this is a deliberate policy that was set when Germany began those pipelines, and I'm sure there were other things going on then as well, that very firmly put Germany outside of the NATO camp and in the Russia camp. And Donald Trump saw that, and Donald Trump went over to Germany and said, you're undermining NATO, and said, you know, this is going to be the result. So it's not an accident.
I find it quite extraordinary to see this taking place, given the emphasis that Gerald Fleury has put on this German-Russian relationship over the years. He has locked in on that repeatedly in major feature stories that he has written over the years. Looked at from the standpoint of biblical prophecy, how big of a turning point is this for, say, German-American relations, or we could say German, or the existence of the transatlantic relationship and NATO, and And then what is this German-Russian relationship leading to?
So one of the things that Mr. Fry really focused on in the latest Trumpet print that it's kind of astounding in some ways just to see it just go to print on Friday before all of this heats up even further, is he looked at, well, who is behind this Nord Stream 2 pipeline? Who are the ones that are deliberately making this choice to get in bed with Russia? And tracing that to German industrialists and showing how, you know, time and again, German industrialists have pushed for the rise in this very strong Germany. This Germany that that dominates Europe, that potentially even dominates the world. That these industrialists were the same ones that kind of backed Adolf Hitler, that backed the rise of Germany even before that. After World War II, they said that they promised to go underground and support the reemergence of a strong Germany later. This is exactly what you've seen happen. They're the ones behind this. So there's a definite agenda here, and the goal of that agenda is to really strengthen Germany. And doing that at the moment means getting rid of NATO. It means getting rid of America as kind of the leading power in Europe and pushing Germany out and Germany in Europe. So those people are working to do that. And this is something Mr. Flurry focused on in a cover article that we had on our Trumpet magazine all the way back in the summer of 2018. Germany and Russia's Secret War Against America, is the full title of that. But this betrayal is exactly trusted. There are all kinds of prophecies that talk about the modern nations of Israel, that's Britain and America largely, and Israel in the Middle East, looking at Germany as a lover, looking at this alliance and not seeing it as a mutually beneficial arrangement where each country kind of can work together to get what it wants, but looks at it and kind of thinks, well, they love us. We can really trust them. They love the same things that we do. They love the U.S. world order. They love the freedom that they brought us. They like this world where America is top dog, and there's freedom and democracy, at least in the West. And they're going to help and support us and strengthen us because they love us. That's the kind of the way that Britain and America look at that. And there's all kinds of scriptures about this. Ezekiel 23 is the most direct. Jeremiah 30 and verse 14 talks about this as well. There's a lot. And these same scriptures say that these lovers are going to turn around and betray Britain and America, that it's fake. That as soon as they stop getting, which I think we've reached that point, and this week has clearly shown that, they will turn against the United States, turn against Britain. And Britain and America don't want to believe this. Even with everything that we've seen over the last week, I think both the Biden administration and Boris Johnson in London have been completely ignoring this and even trying to cover and make excuses for Germany. But they're going to come and they're going to turn against Britain and America. And this is just the very beginning of that betrayal. We're only just getting started. It's going to get dramatically worse. But these same scriptures talk about, well, God's doing it because we're looking to allies, we're looking to lovers, we're looking to other people instead of looking to Him to defend us, to keep us safe. And it's, God says that He'll do that for us if we trust Him, if we obey Him, and instead we're wanting to disobey, to do what we want, to do these actions that are really bringing a huge amount of suffering on ourselves, and then look to other lovers for help defending ourselves instead of looking to God. So God is going to bring an end to that time. And He is even behind, and these scriptures also make clear, this betrayal that is coming from Germany and from Europe.
Critical prophecy and an outstanding explanation, and we just appreciate the background that you've given us here. We've been talking with trumpet writer Richard Palmer about Germany's betrayal of Ukraine and how it is undermining NATO and backing Russia. He wrote a trumpet brief about this subject on Monday. You can find that at thetrumpet.com. The title of that article, Ukraine Crisis Exposes Germany's Betrayal. I also really encourage you to read the coming print edition of The Trumpet, our March 2022 issue. That should be up on the website now. We have our cover story from our editor-in-chief, Gerald Flurry, about the rise of German industrialists. Richard mentioned the role that they have played in Germany's rise. Also an article by Josue Michels and Richard on the German-Russian relationship, and one by Jeremiah Jacques on what Russia is up to in Ukraine right now, as well as Kazakhstan and elsewhere. And we'll link to a couple of the other articles that we mentioned in the interview there, including Germany and Russia's secret war against America, and an article about that episode with the genocide in Ukraine that that Richard mentioned as well, Germany and Russia's secret genocide. Outstanding. Thanks so much, Richard. Appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
This is the voice of the Trumpet News Magazine. You're listening to Trumpet Hour.
U.S. President Joe Biden said it might be okay for Russia to make a minor incursion into Ukraine without consequences. How much are Biden's dubious business activities in Ukraine influencing his policy toward Russia? We'll get some answers in this report from Andrew Miller.
Throughout President Donald Trump's four-year tenure in the White House, the news media warned us repeatedly that he was compromised by the Russians. The now infamous Steele dossier accused Mr. Trump of escapades with Russian prostitutes and criminal links to Russian oligarchs. Now, not one bit of that dossier was ever verified, and subsequent investigations have now found that it was compiled by the Hillary Clinton campaign in a deliberate attempt to stir up scandal against Mr. Trump by spreading rumors and lies. Yet the most ironic part of the Russiagate hoax may be the fact that the lies the Democrats spread about Mr. Trump are actually true regarding Joe Biden's scandal-plagued son, Hunter. As a Russian invasion of Ukraine looks likely, Vladimir Putin knows the United States is not going to stop him. How does he know this? An investigation into a laptop owned by Hunter Biden revealed 154,000 emails, 103,000 text messages, and more than 2,000 photographs proving Hunter was involved in prostitution, drug trafficking, and black market business deals. The media initially tried to dismiss these revelations as Russian disinformation, but Hunter himself has actually owned up to most of them in his memoir, Beautiful Things. These activities make Hunter an ideal target for foreign information services and raise the important question, what other blackmail does Moscow have on the Bidens? Now, back in 2020, the Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Government Affairs released a report that found that Hunter sent thousands of dollars to Russians and Ukrainians linked to what appears to be an Eastern European prostitution ring. It also found that Hunter accepted $3.5 million from the wife of a corrupt former Moscow mayor and made several business trips to China under Secret Service protection while his father was vice president. More recent revelations now show that the Barack Obama's Secret Service deliberately hid key details of Hunter's overseas travels to China, Russia, Kazakhstan, and other places. Now, this raises grave concerns that Chinese, Kazakhstani, Russian, and Ukrainians were attempting to bribe the Obama administration by giving large sums of money to Joe Biden's family. Hunter worked for the Ukrainian energy company Burisma Holdings, which is owned by the ally of former Ukrainian President Viktor Yanukovych. After signing several dictatorial anti-protest laws on January 16, 2014, Yanukovych was ousted from power. He now lives in exile in Russia, but the British government alleges that four of his political allies are still working with Russian intelligence services to subvert Ukraine. So there's a real possibility that some of Hunter's business contacts at Burisma have already told Russian intelligence services about his corrupt business dealings. Hunter has also described Kazakhstan's former intelligence chief, Kerim Masimov, as a personal friend. In 2005, Senator Hillary Clinton canceled a scheduled meeting with Masimov in an attempt to force the Kazakh government into approving a lucrative uranium mining deal that would have benefited one of her associates. But Masimov did not meet Hunter till 2014, when Hunter was trying to negotiate an energy deal between Burisma Holdings and Kazakhstan's government. Hunter allegedly skipped his Secret Service detail for this super secret meeting. Yet now Masimov has been arrested by Kazakhstan's government on suspicion of treason. Street protests over fuel prices have sparked a power struggle between Kazakhstan's current president and Kazakhstan's former president. Since Masimov is a close ally of the former president, he is suspected of being behind the protest. So this means that yet another corrupt oligarch with dirt on the Biden family is now in the custody of Russian allies. The noted documentary maker Peter Schweizer has released a new book entitled Red-Handed: How American Elites Get Rich Helping China Win. This book exposes that in addition to Hunter's corrupt business dealings in Kazakhstan, Russia, and Ukraine, he also has deep financial interest in communist China. Specifically, it reveals how the Biden family made $31 million from five business deals made with individuals with direct ties to the Chinese government spy apparatus. One of these tycoons is Che Feng, the son of a People Liberation Army soldier and the son-in-law of the governor of the People's Bank of China. Hunter and his partners refer to him as the super chairman because of his efforts to fuse Chinese financial might to those with access to the highest levels of powers in the Western world. These fusion efforts led to the creation of Bohai Harvest RST, a Hunter Biden firm which helped China buy 44% of the world's cobalt from a U.S. company. Now, the super chairman has since been arrested on charges of money laundering and bribery, so you can be sure that the Politburo of the Chinese Communist Party knows as much about Biden family corruption as Vladimir Putin does. So is it any wonder why Joe Biden is so soft on both Russia and China? His family has made millions of dollars dealing with these two powers, and he assuredly does not want Vladimir Putin or Xi Jinping talking about all the money laundering, bribery, prostitution, and other crimes his son has been involved in. Now, as shocking as this corruption may seem, it's not unique to the Biden family. Investigative journalist Lee Smith actually wrote an article a couple years back entitled America's China Class Launches a New War Against Trump. And in that article, he wrote, the central pillar of the corrupt new order is the American elite's relationship with China. American political and corporate elites didn't choose decline. They chose to get rich. By shipping America's manufacturing base off to China, they seized a business opportunity the likes which has never been seen before. An enormous captive labor force controlled by an authoritarian regime that guarantees the steady production of goods at a fraction of what it would cost at home. Since the Clinton White House granted China most favored nation trading status in 2000, over 3.7 million American jobs have been lost to China, mostly in the U.S. manufacturing sector. President Trump's trade war with China earned him the enmity of the Clintons, the Bidens, and America's whole China class, which has grown wealthy, helping China become a world-class power by offshoring America's industrial strength. In many ways, President Trump is leading a populist revolt against the American deep state. And this deep state is betraying the interest of the American people to foreign powers like Russia and China. In ancient times, the prophet Amos condemned greedy leaders who put their own selfish interest above the interest of their people. In Amos chapter 6, verses 1 through 7, it says, "Woe to them that are at ease in Zion, that trust in the mountain of Samaria, which are named chief of the nations, to whom the house of Israel came. You put far away the evil day and cause the seat of violence to come near. You lie upon beds of ivory and stretch out upon your couches. You eat lambs out of the flock and calves out of the midst of the stall, that chant to the sound of the viol and invent to themselves instruments of music like David, that drink bowls and wine and anoint themselves with chief ointments, but are not grieved for the affliction of Joseph. Therefore, now shall you go captive with the first that go captive, and the banquet of them that stretch themselves shall be removed. And so today, you see the same attitude in America, especially amongst the political class selling America's industrial might and natural resource wealth to foreign nations in return for profit. They put far away the evil day and refuse to mourn for the affliction of their nation. Donald Trump is building his political campaign on a promise to drain the swamp of establishment politicians and start fighting for the interests of everyday Americans. Trump editor-in-chief Gerald Fleury explained in his article, Who is the Modern-Day Jeroboam?, that President Trump is an end-time Jeroboam II, and like the ancient Jeroboam II, God uses him to save the nation from the brink of destruction. God warns, I will not pass by them again anymore. This is America's last chance to repent, and that is why God is allowing so much government corruption to be exposed. People have to see how bad things are if they're going to wake up and realize something is not right.
This is Trumpet Hour with Joel Hilliker.
The number one killer on the planet is a bad diet. The number two killer is high blood pressure, with more than 100 million Americans suffering from the disease and 1 million people dying of it just this year. To talk about this, we have via Skype from his office in British Columbia, holistic nutritionist and personal trainer, Jorg Mardian. Hello, Jorg.
Hello there.
So what is high blood pressure?
Well, high blood pressure is what's called the silent killer. And you can have it for years and you might not know it. It's really dangerous because it can lead to heart disease, stroke, kidney failure, brain damage. I mean, just a host of symptoms. And there's the statistics say there's about 721 million prescriptions written for it. It really, if you're looking at the definition of it, it's the amount of force that is exerted against the walls of your arteries, normal blood pressure. So that pushes your blood to the from the heart to the organs and muscles, and then they get oxygen and nutrients. When you get that high blood pressure, or what we call hypertension, it's when the force of that blood pushing against the wall of the blood vessels is just too high consistently. And we don't want that, right? So that's a thing. So when your doctor diagnoses high blood pressure, if you go to your doctor and say, I'd like to know what it is, he measures two numbers, such as 120 over 80. Mm-hmm. So like the first number, the 120, is the amount of force when the heart beats, and that's your systolic blood pressure. And the second number is just the pressure in the arteries between the heartbeats, and that's your diastolic blood pressure. So that's a technical term of it. But what's important is what the medical profession is doing with the definitions of high blood pressure. And that was changed in 2017. You know, the baseline, the optimum blood pressure was lowered to less than 120 over 80. That's really low. Hmm. While 120 over 80, which used to be optimal, is now elevated. And what was measured as high before was 140 over 80 is now 130 over 80. So that really means that 45% of Americans, which is about 100 million people, now have high blood pressure and didn't know it.
So
compared to 31%.
So they changed the definition. There are more people who fit into the category, but to say that there are a million people who die of it each year is that's a whole lot of people. So it's clearly a serious problem affecting a lot of people.
It's clearly a problem. And what we're trying to do is look at cause and effect. And the medical profession looks at the effect. not the cause. So we can they treat the effect with medicinally rather than looking primarily at the cause of it and looking at it like that, right? So changing the definition and saying, well, we're doing this for your good, that's fine and dandy, and saying, well, there's a whole lot more people that have it than we used to know. But really what that does is it just puts more people on the path to medicines. Hmm. You know, it leads to an overuse and too little emphasis on healthy natural changes. And so that's really what we should be examining here. Why are we going down the wrong path? Mm-hmm. And there's causes for that.
So what are the causes then of high blood pressure?
Well, high blood pressure is a lifestyle issue, really. You know, we're told to have to eat a low fat diet if we have high blood pressure. But a low-fat diet isn't the issue, and that it can actually be deadly for us. You know, studies show that there's no evidence that saturated fat and cholesterol-rich foods contribute to heart disease. And that may be surprising to a lot of people. And some studies even show that the low-fat diet can actually promote heart disease. And there's many papers on that, peer-reviewed papers on, you know, so if what we're doing is we're replacing these healthy, natural, saturated fats, unprocessed, with vegetable fats. Now, they did this and they had a study and they showed that, you know, a 5-year study, and they actually lowered cholesterol by 5%. So that's the aim, right? We want to lower cholesterol. And cholesterol is directly related to high blood pressure, you know. So you get high blood pressure because of high elevated cholesterol levels. And yet increasingly, as we lower cholesterol levels, you know, total mortality increased by 50%. Mm. So a lot of people don't understand that. So we're doing something with our lifestyle. And our lifestyle really, if we look at it, if we're eating, you know, pizzas and takeout food and junk food and you know, sugar drinks and we're sedentary and we're not doing anything. Somebody told me the other day, well, I'm really busy with my job. And I said, well, what are you actually doing? Well, I'm walking. But it depends on really what you're doing with your lifestyle. If your walking doesn't overcome what you're doing at home, if you're doing an hour of walking, that's fine. But if you're at home and then you're watching TV and you're eating chips, it really doesn't do much for you, does it? So the lifestyle that we have today is so sedentary, it's really damaging us. And the high blood pressure is somewhat like, so you have an old garden hose and it's full of gunk and grime and, you know, and to get the water to go through it, you have to put quite a bit of water pressure through that. And so that's really what your cholesterol is. And it's a thing. High cholesterol is a thing. But why is it a thing? High cholesterol is the body needs it to its very cellular structure, cholesterol. Mm-hmm. And what we're saying is, well, because it gets into the arteries, therefore we have to drive it down. Do we ever think that the cholesterol could be a mechanism to protect us because of our lifestyle? You know, the body's reacting to the pizza and the sugary drinks and the inactivity. You know, it's the body, what the medicinal approach is that the body does inherently bad things. That's not true. Mm-hmm. The body reacts, the process in the body react to what we do. So, or what we don't do. If we're healthy, there's many, many people that don't have high cholesterol or high blood pressure because they lead a good lifestyle, you know. And the dangers of you know, the dietary fats and cholesterol, that needs to be reconsidered. You know, the millions of dollars that's spent on the cholesterol theory have really come up empty-handed, according to studies. You know, it's not a low-fat diet. It's a natural diet, natural foods, healthy fats. You know, we can't just take out fats from meats and things that are really healthy for us and say, just reduce that to a nub, to almost nothing. That's never happened in history. You know, and we're suffering for that. So, but bad theories die hard. And, you know, is 2021 now, and that theory has really been debunked thoroughly for many decades, but it still hasn't changed. And there's a very good cause for that, why it hasn't changed.
Well, what do the medicines that doctors prescribe actually do to lower blood pressure?
The medicines, well, that's exactly what their job is, to lower blood, to lower cholesterol levels, and to get your blood pressure as a reaction to that down. You know, there's two different types of medicine, sorry. One is for high blood pressure and one is for cholesterol. But having said that, the two are related. Mm-hmm. So high blood pressure is related to high cholesterol, just different medicines in their approaches, right? So we can be successful in doing what we're doing. Like, the objective is to lower cholesterol, but the outcome is bad. You know, the risk of reducing the heart disease and the strokes and the other problems, that's not being reduced. There's a study with the Canadian Medical Association Journal that shows that certain blood pressure medications are linked to a lot of risk, like skin cancer. And there's two types of medication. They're called alpha blockers and alpha agonists. And they actually do what I call the ultimate side effect of the medical system, which is death. No, they cause death. That's one of the risks. So you have to weigh the odds of what you're trying to do. So statins now, statins are the most widely prescribed drug in the history of medicine. So now we know, when we're looking at medicine, and we can compare it to what COVID's doing and vaccines. I mean, there's no one that will argue that these companies are out for profit right now. I mean, they're just driving these medicines for more profit, more profit, more profit. And that's how it works with statins as well. You know, we know they're a colossal waste of money. You know, study after study shows that the more bad cholesterol is lowered, the greater the risk of heart attacks and strokes.
Wow.
The studies show that, and yet we continue this stuff. And why do we do that? There's a book that how statin drugs really lower cholesterol. And it says that, you know, there's billions generated from first demonizing cholesterol. And then secondly, discovering a poison medicine, which is statins, capable of, and I'm not saying they're doing that on purpose, of course, but it does cause disease and death. So, like I said, cholesterol is needed by the body, and it's a defensive mechanism to what we're doing. And we lead a nasty lifestyle today, whether we do it on purpose, you know, we're sitting and we're lying in bed and eating chips and chocolate bars, or we don't know what we're buying and we're not reading the labels. But the food is inherently bad for us today if we're not careful. So it comes down to a lot of habits, lifestyle habits, not just food, but lifestyle, how we react to our environment. We're just not doing nothing. Now, obviously, when we talk about sales of medicines, you know, we get down to the nitty gritty. Total revenues of statins by this year are supposed to reach $1 trillion. Mm. You know, so will this cholesterol theory, the high blood pressure cholesterol theory, low fat dietary intervention continue? Yes, it will. It generates a lot of money. It does it in the same way that they've been driving the vaccine sales, despite the evidence. Despite what we see in front of our eyes, despite what the studies say, they will, because money drives this, greed.
So if you want to get off that train, it sounds like you have a pretty clear prescription of how to do that. Is it fair to say that basically if your diet is right and you're moving the way that you should, that you're not going to be dealing with high blood pressure? And is it as simple as trying to clean up your diet and make sure that you're exercising?
Well, of course, lifestyle changes are effective, and they're highly effective. It's just that when somebody goes to the doctor, you know, you will always hear, yes, we know lifestyle changes and they're needed, but the first thing you're prescribed is a medicine. So the proof lies in the fact that, you know, heart disease remains the number one cause of death in the U.S., and it has actually killed you know, more than the COVID crisis in 2021, and it's going to continue that. So we need to change our lifestyles, you know, to avoid high blood pressure. It takes some time. It takes some consistent effort, of course, but and as well the elevated cholesterol levels. You know, eat a nutrient-rich diet that includes a lot of fruits and vegetables, healthy saturated fats from natural foods like dairy, coconut oil, or red meats. And you don't have to eat a ton of those, but they should be in our diet. You want to get those monounsaturated fats like olive oil. They're obviously healthy, or polyunsaturated fats like tuna or salmon. We don't want to cut those out at all. And of course, exercise is a powerful tool. You know, the studies show that 90% of heart disease is preventable by modifying our lifestyle. So, and it doesn't take that much. For example, one session of exercise at 40% capacity, that's the equivalent of walking, okay? And I was actually stunned when I read this. It's associated with a 4-point systolic blood pressure and a 3-point diastolic blood pressure reduction for up to 24 hours. That's just a moderate way. Now imagine you're capable of doing a little more, you know, and you're capable of doing that consistently 4 or 5 times a week. And then you go in and you say, well, I'm going to eat a lot better because I feel better because I'm exercising. Well, of course the body's going to react. I've been in this business for a long time, and I rarely see no benefit from a lifestyle change. You know, people, the question I get is, well, what can I expect in the next 2 weeks? That's a question I can't answer. But what I say is watch what happens. And by that, I mean, there's going to be some powerful, good things that happen. You know, it always goes upwards. Now, I just want to add too that there are, if things don't move along, there are certain supplements that we know that help, like fish oil. They're very, very good for high blood pressure. Chia seeds and flaxseed, they reduce inflammation and high blood pressure. Actually, chia seeds, very cheap, but very effective. It's amazing. Magnesium, it just relaxes the blood vessels for an immediate impact before you go to sleep. You know, so, and then coenzyme Q10 is also really good for heart health. So if things aren't moving along as much as you like with that, then you can put in some supplements. But usually the dietary and the exercise are extremely powerful tools. You know, prevention through natural means is just, like I always tell people, it has to be done in a consistent manner. And people are a little bit impatient. Remember, high blood pressure can be there for years, decades, and you don't know it. It's running in the background. You know, it's like some process on the computer you just don't know about until it all of a sudden shows up and causes a problem. But by then it might be too late. So you know, there's 3 principles that I give people. Make sure you eat natural, nutritious whole foods. Just make sure when you look at your plate that that's what it is. They're not processed. Which is the second one, avoid that what's bad for you. I mean, we all know what's bad, the sugar, the junk, the stuff that's got a lot of the chemicals. Just try to avoid that as much as possible. And then the third is portion your meals to what you need, not to what you want. Portion control is big. 20% less. Immediate impact. Within a week or two, you will notice the difference. Your weight goes down, your waist size goes down, you're going to feel better. And then, of course, you know, do a little more movement, breathe a little more, sleep a little more, and then you're going to reap the benefits.
We always appreciate the practical approach that you take. We've been talking with personal trainer and holistic nutritionist York Mardian about high blood pressure and what to do about it. He's working on an article that should appear soon at thetrumpet.com. Thanks so much, York. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
I'm Joel Hilliker, and that will do it for today's Trumpet Hour. You can send me any thoughts on today's program to letters@thetrumpet.com. Thanks to my guests, Richard Palmer, Andrew Miller, and Jörg Mardian. Thanks to Nick Irwin and Dwight Falk for engineering and production. I'll leave you with this thought from Carl Bard. Although no one can go back and make a brand new start, anyone can start from now and make a brand new ending. Thank you for joining us on Trumpet Hour. Until next time, keep watching your world.
Been listening to Trumpet Hour on Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm. Understand your world.